You're listening to Gamesform's Mobilize and Monetize podcast. Dive into the world of mobile gaming with us as we explore the latest trends and discuss best practices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mobilize and Monetize. And really, really excited today, actually, because joining me is Jesse Limpian, who is CEO and co-founder at Geek Lab. Jesse, so great to have you on. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much, Mariam. Super happy to be here and have a chat.
Yeah, super, super interested to get some of your perspectives. Before we sort of kick off into the real meat of the conversation, I wanted to ask you, you know, tell me a little bit about yourself. For those who don't know, what inspired you to create Geek Lab? What sort of gap in the market did you identify in creating Geek Lab?
Right. Yeah, well, we're based here in Helsinki, Finland. And given the fact that there's approximately 10 months of the year, complete darkness and nothing else, we tend to have the highest capita of saunas per capita. The highest amount of saunas per capita. Highest amount of like heavy metal bands per capita. Yeah. And I'm also quite sure still, I don't know, Turkey is doing well, but there are a lot of more people in Turkey. But I also think we're like the highest in terms of mobile game developers per capita as well. So
interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's also what I then ended up doing. I was working at Rovio for quite a bit prior to Geek Lab, and that's actually where I came across an issue where then the Geek Lab was actually the solution for. And the issue in place was that we're making up this new mobile game, Forex game, where we wanted to combine this 80s action hero theme and then also a very casual art style, and then just the best practices of what Forex was at that time.
Right.
We knew that, like, specifically with the 80s team, that actual name would have like quite a big of an impact to how we brand the game, how players would pursue it. We looked across and checked like if there would be opportunities for us to test what the name actually could be and what the impact of changing the name would be. As we looked around, couldn't find any solution that was viable for the tests. And that's why then I opened up Visual Studio Code and tried to code the tool and ended up coding the tool. And then we founded Geek Lab with a couple of co-founders quite soon after that.
Nice. Interesting stuff. So I did a little bit of research on Jesse, as I told him in our previous conversation. And what I discovered was quite interesting. So his entrepreneurial journey is quite fascinating. So you started, obviously, Geek Lab. You also have a clothing company. You have a dance studio as well. So, and now a successful tech company. So how do these sort of experiences shape your leadership style and your sort of business philosophy? That's quite a broad range of businesses you have there.
Let's start from the business point of view. I think that's where I learned the most. Actually, the one that I founded, co-founded the clothing company with is one of the co-founders at Geek Lab as well.
Interesting.
And from that perspective, I think just in general, you learn a lot by just doing and failing a ton. And specifically with the clothing company as well, we failed a ton.
It's a super competitive field, right?
Oh, yeah. When we founded it, we were quite... I'd love to say that we're still super young, but at the time we were quite young, and of course that comes with some financial disadvantages as well.
Yeah.
So figuring out on how to what to stock and how to stock, and you know, just in general, like that's in clothing business, that's quite a difficult thing to overcome. The fact that you always have to buy in advance. That was kind of prior to dropshipping becoming a big thing, and still we wanted to make our own clothing brand with high quality stuff, and so on. And then at the same time with the dance school itself, I've learned so much in terms of marketing as well from the dance school itself. As a comparison, like in Geek Lab, we on a daily basis we talk, and obviously like everyone in mobile gaming industry and app industry in general, we talk about global ad campaigns with like massive budgets and typically very, very broad, like geographical limitations,
yeah,
and so on. Whereas in the dance school, it's located in a certain part of like very densely distributed Finland.
Yeah.
So like kind of figuring out how to reach as many people as possible, and also kind of the value of the brand itself, were some things that I've definitely learned from the dance school, and that we've been able to take into Geek Lab as well when we do marketing, as an example, in events and stuff. So we try to kind of apply sort of the same tricks that we've done with the dance school too.
Right. Interesting stuff. So I wanted to sort of ask you as well, because obviously with everything that's going on in the news right now, you know, it's like litigation central, you know, given the dominance of Google and Apple in the tech industry, how does Geek Lab sort of position itself to innovate and compete effectively? You know, there's always this fear that, you know, newer tech companies are being overshadowed by these massive, you know, monopolies. So what are your thoughts on that?
Well, as we're sort of or we like to see ourselves as a central part of like making the marketing work within these platforms.
Right.
So I see that the more kind of the more like these news have come out, like the more essential, like I feel that the need for external tools like ours, like become essentially.
Yeah.
In kind of at the same time, kind of instead of seeing us like even like in any way, like in a kind of a competitive space between, as an example, Google and Apple, like it's more about us actually being a supportive function there that can help to navigate in these quite difficult circumstances that exist right now. And we do maintain a very close relationship with Google, as an example, and have an open communication about the new stuff and try to kind of together solve some of these issues. The same goes with ad networks as well. They, of course, try to adapt to all these changes, and then we try to help wherever we can to also be the bridge between networks and game developers and marketers.
Right. So how does Geek Lab sort of approach the challenge of, you know, in the through the lens of creative? How does Geek Lab sort of approach the challenge of measuring the impact of creative optimization? You know, especially given the sort of limitation of user-based attribution. And maybe you could explain sort of like what tools and methodologies do you use?
Right. Well, first, I think it's kind of sad because I also, at Rovio, I still used to live in the day and age when kind of the user-level attribution and measurement was a standard rather than like a holy grail. And I kind of feel like, unfortunately, we have to now accept like completely that there won't be a universal user level attribution tool.
Right.
Like that's unfortunately just outdated, and we can't kind of get back to that anymore, I think. But then I think on the other hand, we have to flip the switch and start to think more a step sort of up from the user level in terms of data granularity and try to measure as much as we can on a creative level where then things are by heart more privacy friendly.
Yeah, and that's something you obviously have to consider more these days, don't you, given everything that's going on?
Oh yeah, privacy. Absolutely, with all the other regulations and stuff coming in place as well. And then at the same time, of course, like that doesn't really solve the attribution. Like it can give you tools as a marketeer to understand what's happening, but it doesn't solve the attribution issues. But we do see, or at least I feel that like the networks themselves are still solving these attribution issues, but only for themselves. Like as an example, right now it seems like the conversion APIs and other server-to-server stuff seems to be more and more sort of pushed forward and being one of these options to be a user level. Like attribution, to be honest.
Right.
But at the same time, this is every ad network is solving this for themselves, by themselves, in their own way, which makes it like a complete, unfortunately, a complete mess for a marketeer to
right.
truly.
Right, everyone's just going to play catch up, right? Trying to see what they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's I think the both the opportunity, but also the challenge right now. So to sum up, like being able to attribute still to the networks that need the attribution through these like technologies that they provide, and at the same time then like kind of shift your focus from analyzing the results on a user level to just focus on the creative level and make the decisions more based on the creative level data itself. Yeah, and in terms of tools themselves, right. Like you asked, so it's truly, like I said, it unfortunately right now the sort of universal user level attribution tools are not available in an extent that we had them before. But now it would be like a mix of different analytics tools and then integrating all these network and platform specific tech from server to server, like technologies to scan and so on. Yeah. And then also you can use stuff like there's a lot of companies that provide, you know, you plugging in all the data that you have and then utilizing like Gaussian AI as an example to try to make sense of the complete massive data set that you have from all these different sources and try to get the insights from there. And then on top of that, actually, one of the reasons that we raised a bit of money about 1.5 years ago to extend on our current offering, also like a new R&D sort of function where we focus on this specific issue and we have a creative level data analytics tool like now rolling out in with a couple of companies, and then we're gonna actually come out with that on public then in Pocket Gamer Helsinki in the beginning.
Oh, nice! So this is a launch that's to come.
Yes, yes.
Exciting.
Well, now I actually said it, and the date is out there. So I guess now it's a launch. Then you heard it first here.
Yeah, exactly.
But yeah, so that's something that we've now been sort of researching and developing for the past 1.5 years, plan to get it out as soon as possible for everyone, because I truly believe that like it's both the privacy friendly solution for the end customers themselves. Like we don't care what Mariam specifically ate for breakfast yesterday, but we'd care about like what people that eat cereal in the morning might have in common, right? So yeah, that's just
interesting. I can't wait to see what it is. I'm looking forward to this now. I'm going to keep an eye out.
Awesome. Yes.
So, Jesse, what sort of sets GeekLab apart from other tech companies? You know, there's so many in the space, but how do you define your GeekLab's core values and their mission?
Right. Well, there's four founders that we built GeekLab with from the very beginning, and I think we kind of share more or less the similar types of traits. And then when we've hired people, we've kind of made sure that these traits come across, and that's also our like what set our core mission to be what it is. And in short, actually also on top of the industries that you mentioned earlier, so the clothing and the dance school. So I used to be a DJ.
Before, I could see
before
that.
Before it was. Thanks, I guess.
I can see that. In a good
but, yeah, good, thanks. But yeah, I was touring a bit and then made own music and made music for others as well. And creativity was really the thing that, you know, fueled me there, but also fueled like when we partnered up GeekLab, like to just love to code and create. And that leads to our mission itself then. Like we truly believe that for every single creation that you do, there is an audience. It might not be the world's biggest audience, but like even if you make like a very, very specific thing, for sure there'll be people around the world that love it. Yeah. And that's our mission. Like we want to help everyone that create to find like who that audience might be and then actually connect with that audience. And everything that we do is very sort of catered towards that, which both allows us to create quite a big amount of different tools and things that mobile marketers and developers can utilize, whilst at the same time having like a very clear sort of path forward on what we're doing.
Right. I find that really interesting too, because you're saying that you're obviously a very creative person, and that sort of creativity has lended itself, to your business endeavors across so many different scopes. So I find that, quite interesting and inspiring. So
Thanks.
last question here for you, Jesse. Where do you see, we always like to do a little bit of future gazing with our guests. And for you, I sort of want to ask, where do you see Geek Lab in the next 5 years? What are some of the primary opportunities and challenges that you predict?
Right. I will talk about AI in a second, but I'm not going to start with the
Yeah.
obvious. But I feel like also kind of depends in terms of where the market dominance will shift. Like now, still, I feel like it's specifically the Western companies are quite
Right.
focused on the Western markets, and then even the Eastern companies are focused on the Western markets too. So if that's the case, so then I think the biggest sort of challenges, but at the same time could be opportunities, will come from these regulations. We've now seen kind of that snowball start to come across, and it's interesting to see what that will end up doing. Like as an example, is there an opportunity that like the duopoly of Apple and Google would kind of not be as big as it is right now, and alternatives could come. Personally, I do not believe that that would come, like unless like the very, very heavy regulations
Right.
would allow, because it would still require for both developers to have that intent and push that forward, as well as then the end users to have like as seamless of a convenient experience that they have now with the native tools. And as of today, at least, and based on the current scale, I don't see any sort of reason why Apple would allow, as an example, to these alternatives to be as convenient as they are.
Right.
They also have the which would not make the end users feel so good about it, and at the same time, the developers with the actual fees and other stuff that Apple is pushing through don't have the sort of intent to then go forward with this. So therefore I think that will sort of be the big question in terms of like where that ball will
Yeah.
roll. I would predict that it would stay more or less stationary, and still Apple and Google would remain with their power, I'd say.
Yeah, I'm with you there actually. I don't see that sort of like monopoly or dominance going away anytime soon. It's just sort of like being able to work with it and around it, kind of what you guys are doing. Like you said, it's an addition to rather than in competition with.
Exactly. And then like you can't predict stuff that's happening in the future if you don't use AI to predict it, or at least mention it. But yeah, like and I'd like to say even that as a company as well, like we've like way before like we had even the technical capabilities ourselves to play around with AI now. So from the very first day, we decided to make sure that from agreements point of view that we do with developers, as well as like then from the structure point of view, we'll make sure that the data is something that we'll be able to reutilize and bring useful features and tools to our users in the future. And then as of today, we have like full capability of building like production level icons, like with our own like generative like image generation model. You can analyze your campaigns, and you can analyze market insights, and even like ask for test ideas through Gen AI. So yeah, that's obviously like one thing that will just like become like stronger, faster, and bigger. And I think that'll then up end up leading into a situation where we'll have like way more like high quality games, and like sort of just more stuff coming on and on. And so it'll be very interesting to see kind of where the saturation point is. And then lastly, I think because of all that, I think the value of like IPs themselves will just increase, because at the end of the day, like if you have a Game of Thrones Conquest, and then you have like 10,000 other games that like look and feel exactly the same, but they don't have the Targaryens and Stark families and so on. So which one will you pick, right? Like you'll probably pick the bigger IP, so I think that'll become stronger. But maybe on the other hand, the positive side is that maybe we'll see another form of games and entertainment being like personalized games where you'd kind of build up the game as you play along with it. That
That's
might
something that I
in the
would like to
future.
see more of, actually, because obviously, there's all this talk around like personalization, even with ads, like this talk around if the ad is personalized enough to the individual, people don't mind as much. So I wonder how that would, like you said, translate into game creation. Like I would love to see something like as you play more, the game sort of creates a narrative around what you want to see. Yeah, that'd be awesome to see.
Exactly. I haven't tried them out yet, but I've seen already that like there's a ton of like Skyrim mods. It's crazy that that game is still being modded
I
like
know,
to the
right?
top. But
It's
like
nuts.
Skyrim mods where like you have like real conversations then with the actual NPCs in the world, and I'm not sure if you're there even able to remember stuff, and
Right,
it's
that'd be
crazy.
interesting because NPCs, there's all these jokes around it, isn't it? Like NPCs only have so much capabilities at the moment, but I wonder how that would develop in the future. I mean, it's something, we can look forward to, I guess.
Oh yeah, the day that like that mod comes in light in Cyberpunk and the NPCs truly like work, I won't be
Right.
able to work anymore.
I know, right? I still need to play that game, actually. I haven't played it yet.
Highly recommend. Highly
Yeah, it's
recommend.
on the list for sure. Fantastic. Well, Yassi, thank you so much for your time. That was a very insightful and inspiring discussion. And yeah, thank you so much for
Thanks.
joining me today.
Thanks, Miriam. It was really a pleasure.
And that was it for this week's Mobilize and Monetize podcast. Until next week.